my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for my 1-2-3 cents of a podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo!
Hey friends, welcome to episode 262 of my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast. It is Wrestling with the 80s, and we're going to be talking about the very first Survivor Series, which went down in November 1987. It was Thanksgiving night, 1987, as a matter of fact. The Thanksgiving tradition where teams of five strive to survive. We'll talk all about that with my special guest co-host this week, Scott Cross, in just a couple of minutes. But first, I want to remind you all about the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network, the fine shows here that you will be able to listen to and download, including my 1-2-3 cents, the podcast, of course. There's also Greg Mahochko, the founder of this fine network, and his show, the Five Heart Podcast, all about Nebraska Cornhusker athletics, and also Nerds United, which I actually had the pleasure of being on the most recent episode of Nerds United, where we draft comic book characters into Survivor Series style teams. And right now, if you go to the Jittery Monkey Facebook page or go on Twitter and find the tweet, we're looking to see whose team would survive. Mike Luther's team, Greg Mahochko's team, or my team. And it was a lot of fun kind of talking about that. And I'm not really big into the comic book scene, so I picked mostly characters that I was familiar with through pop culture and social media. So it's a fun listen, though. Go back and check that out as well, the Nerds United show, of course. My friends Chad Smart over at the Positive Cynicism Podcasting Network doing some great shows with his various co-hosts, including Travis Yates, who has been on this show. There's Mike DeKalb. There's Eric Bennett. And there is the Political Calamity Show, and his co-host is escaping me at the moment. But great work going on there. Chad Smart is tearing it up, and go check out what he is doing as well. Our friends over across the river in Cape Girardeau, Podzilla 1985, they continue to do great work, churning out many great shows. And, you know, lots of things going on in the world of professional wrestling, and I don't really talk about a whole lot of the new stuff here on the podcast, but I encourage you. I am actually had a fire lit under me, and I'm doing more, thanks to Red Daniels, by the way, for lighting that fire, and doing more with YouTube. So check out the My 1-2-3 Cents YouTube channel. It is youtube.com/my123cents. Of course, the sale's going on with Pro Wrestling Tees and with Collar and Elbow. ProWrestlingTees.com/my123cents. There are four different pro wrestling my123cents shirts out there, including the Mondo 123, the regular Mondo my123cents t-shirt, the Christmas version of Mondo, and then of course the Stride Pro Wrestling shirt. And that's kind of lead me into this week's guest and this week's conversation. His name is Scott Cross. He is a pro wrestling fan that I met through Stride Pro Wrestling, and Scott has been to many shows and very supportive. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Absolutely, man. So talk to me a little bit and let our listeners know, where do you fall in wrestling fandom? When did you become a fan, and how did we arrive at this point? I know we've talked several times at shows and through Facebook, and you had thrown it out there. I put out a call for co-host, and you answered that call, so to speak. So when did you start watching pro wrestling?
It was shortly after WrestleMania 3 in 1987.
Okay.
I've heard about a little bit of wrestling, but I never watched it. And I remember kids at school talking about WrestleMania 3. So I went to the video store, and I seen Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant on the cover. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. And I watched it, and pretty much ever since then, I've been hooked.
Okay. So how old were you at that point?
like grade school?
I was 7 years old when that happened.
Okay. So for frame of reference, because this is actually perfect that you're being a part of this, because this is the exact year that the very first Survivor Series went down. So I had started watching a few years prior to that, and by this point, I was a freshman in high school when the 1987 Survivor Series goes down. So talk to me a little bit about, because you watched, obviously, that WrestleMania VHS. You start watching then Superstars and stuff on cable, or how did you go from there?
Yeah, I mean, towards that, I would watch WWE Superstars on Saturdays, but I first got introduced to wrestling through PBS and watching WCW.
Okay.
Because that was on more than WWE was. So I kind of watched that, and I think I watched the Starrcade before this one. But I never really followed WCW very much. I was always a WWE guy. So when that kind of happened, I kind of shifted my focus more on WWE. But a friend of ours had one of those boxes. It was kind of illegal back then, but They would get all the pay-per-views for free.
Oh, nice.
So we would go there like probably six times a year, because WWE and WCW would do pay-per-views, but I think they were only running like maybe three or four a year.
Right.
So it's like every couple months we would go over there and watch it. So I pretty much watch anything wrestling related.
Gotcha. Well, and I think most fans know the story now of Survivor Series. As you mentioned, Starrcade. Starrcade, of course, was happening with Jim Crockett Promotions on Thanksgiving night. Vince McMahon and company decide to introduce a second pay-per-view after the success of WrestleMania. I think more specifically WrestleMania 3 that kind of took off like gangbusters. And so they introduce Survivor Series on Thanksgiving night as well, which of course causes problems with cable providers and eventually forces WCW Jim Crockett Promotions to move Starrcade to December. We're not here to debate that or go through that history lesson, as many fans already know. I personally miss that Thanksgiving tradition of having, and even though I never, I shouldn't say never, there were only a handful of times that I actually ordered the pay-per-view on Thanksgiving or the night before Thanksgiving, before they kind of transitioned it to the Sunday night pay-per-views. But you mentioned your friend had the box. Were you watching this particular pay-per-view, Survivor Series 87? Did you watch it live that night, or did you go back and watch it later?
I think I watched it live. I'm pretty sure, because I remember everybody was at school was talking about it, how it was going to be a big deal.
Uh-huh.
And it was going to be kind of like hyped as the rematch between Hogan and Andre, because it was the first time since WrestleMania that they were going to be on opposite teams and they were going to face in the ring together. And I remember everybody talking about that one.
Yeah, I remember it very well as well. As I mentioned, I was in high school freshman year. There was a group of us that ate lunch together every day, and we talked about wrestling most of the time during those lunches. And I remember there was a kid named Bobby Griffey, who I'm actually still friends with on Facebook. He ordered it. Didn't know he was ordering it until that, you know, that next Monday when we all get back from Thanksgiving break. And he's talking about how great it was and that Andre the Giant's team beat Hulk Hogan's team. And I remember disbelief. I didn't believe it, because by then they had not announced anything on Superstars, which ran on the weekend. So we didn't know what happened at Survivor Series, but just basing it off of what this kid Bobby was telling us, and it was like, there's no way Hulk Hogan lost. You know, he's the champ, and, you know, his team wouldn't have lost. They were better than Andre's team. And back then, there was still that sense of, even though we knew it was predetermined, there was still that kind of, you get invested in these guys and these characters, and I was a full-blooded Hulkamaniac, so where were you in that realm? Were you a Hulkamaniac? You're obviously a young kid. You're that target audience, I think, for Hulkamania at that point.
Oh, definitely I was a Hulkamaniac. Actually, I remember getting a fight with one of my friends because he was saying stuff about Hulk Hogan and saying that Andre the Giant was going to beat him. And I literally remember getting a fight with this kid over Hulk Hogan because I was a diehard Hulkamaniac.
So we've kind of set the tone for where we were as fans in 1987. And I know, Scott, you did a lot of research on this as well, and you've rewatched the event. I've watched it as well. I just remember the excitement back then of, I think it's much different tone than it is today, obviously, because wrestling was so, I don't want to say scarce, but back then we got superstars on Sunday. I grew up in St. Louis, so we got superstars on Sundays, and then Monday night, I can't remember if primetime, I think primetime was on in full swing by this point. It wasn't Tuesday Night Titans anymore. So we're watching primetime for a couple of hours on Mondays. You know, nothing's live. It's all pre-recorded, in the can kind of matches. And then you, at that point, once a year you would get a WrestleMania. Now we're introducing something new and something different. And I think that's what really, for me, made the Survivor Series such why I hold so many fond memories of it, because it was something different. We had not seen elimination matches like this, and now they almost have become a dime a dozen. But those early days of the Survivor Series, I really, really, truly miss. Now, where do you stand on this concept of, you know, having these teams and eliminations and whatnot?
I mean, I liked it back then because you got to see, like, certain people tagging up with certain people and like a group of, like, you know, the first match was, you know, Macho Man, Brutus the Barber, Beefcake, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and Jake the Snake on the same team.
Right.
To see all those people together teaming up to take on another team, that was just incredible to me, you know.
Right, and I totally agree, and I think that that team itself of you know, Team Captain, or I don't know if they assigned captains. I think Randy Savage, because I think by this point Randy Savage
Macho
and Honky
Man was the captain of one, and Honky Tonk Man was the captain of the other.
Yeah,
and Honky Tonk Man was the Intercontinental Champion at the time.
Yeah, and it was kind of that weird transition period where Randy Savage had just turned good on Saturday night's main event after Hulk Hogan saved him. I remember thinking back then, why aren't the Hulkamania or the Mega Powers teaming up here? But I'm glad they didn't do it that way, because they kind of spread the talent out. And but I really think if you go for, you know, guys who were over, guys who were popular, guys who were just kind of that upper echelon, that five-man team of Savage, Steamboat, Duggan, Roberts, and Beefcake, one of the all-time great teams, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was obviously the best team of the night, with, yeah, as far as team goes.
Yeah, they end up beating the team, as we mentioned, or as Scott mentioned, Team Captain Honky Tonk Man, who leads in the King Harley Race, Dangerous Danny Davis, Hercules, and Ron Bass. Of course, Bobby Heenan and Jimmy Hart ringside for that one. And if I remember correctly, this is where Honky Tonk Man is that chicken shit heel, for lack of a better word. And when it comes down to the final three on Savage's team, Savage, Steamboat, and Roberts, Honky Tonk Man decides to take a hike and ends up getting counted out, which was kind of typical of his Intercontinental title run.
Yeah, it was. What I liked about this one is, you know, the crowd was so fired up for even like a leg drop. Mm-hmm. I mean, or a clothesline. Like, the crowd was so loud for the whole event. And, you know, nowadays, you barely hear any cheers in the audience nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
But just back then, on a Thanksgiving night, how fired up the crowd was. And, I mean, there was over, what, like 21,000 people there?
Uh-huh.
But it was just, it was awesome to see how much invested the crowd was into all the events. And they only had four matches on their card.
Right. This was a very, again, a unique opportunity for WWE, as we mentioned. It is Thanksgiving night, and I think it kind of harkens back to those early days of wrestling when, you know, people think, oh my gosh, you're running a show on Thanksgiving or you're running a show on Christmas. But by the time evening rolls around, everyone, you know, and it sucks for the wrestlers, the talent, the people who are putting these shows on, but it's a great way to get out. You've been with family all day. You kind of get out and enjoy the night and do whatever. You know, you go to the movie theater on Christmas or on Thanksgiving, and they're packed on those nights as well. It's just another form of entertainment. It's something I miss, but I also, you know, wouldn't necessarily want these guys and women to be away from their families and missing out on, you know, their family time as well. But speaking of women, the Fabulous Moolah leads a team in the second Survivor Series match. And I think, you know, we see the Jumping Bomb Angels, Rockin' Robin and Velvet McIntyre teaming with Moolah, who I guess they had technically transitioned into a face at this point, because Sensational Sherry is here, who had just beaten Moolah for the Women's Championship, Donna Cristianello, the Glamour Girls, who were Leilani Kai and Judy Martin, and then, of course, Dawn Marie, not ECW's Dawn Marie. This is a totally different Dawn Marie, but the good girls, I guess, for lack of a better word, win this one with, I believe, the Jumping Bomb Angels were your sole survivors in this match. Now, this is just a reminder of how far women's wrestling has come over the last 30-plus years.
Yeah, I mean, watching back that match, I didn't realize that back then the women's division was so strong in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Because I only knew a few of the women wrestlers. I knew, you know, Rockin' Robin, Fabulous Moolah, Cherry, and, you know, the Glamour Girls. But a couple of those, I didn't even know who they were. They were new to me.
And if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong here, I feel like, because we've talked about the women's tag team championships, of course, that Bayley and Sasha Banks won not too very long ago, and it was kind of being touted as a historical moment. I feel like the Jumping Bomb Angels and the Glamour Girls were trading the tag team titles back then. I could be wrong. I would need to go back and double check that, but I feel like there were women's tag titles back then, but then they went pretty much dormant because women's wrestling back then, it had ebbs and flows. Wendi Richter coming in 1984 really turned things around. They bring Moolah out. There's a feud there. They bring Leilani Kai in for WrestleMania. And then by late 85, it kind of teeters off again. And we see a little bit in 86, and then Moolah wins the title as she's the champion, and then drops it to Sensational Sherry, who jumps ship and comes in from the AWA. And again, though, this mini boom, if you will, probably till about mid-88 or so, but it kind of went away again. And then Sherry becomes Macho King's valet or manager, and we really kind of miss out on that women's wrestling. But, you know, it's hard to believe that nowadays I think the women are just as talented as the men in a lot of cases and will eclipse and overshadow some of the men's matches.
Oh, yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean, I know back then they didn't have a whole lot. I mean, I know they had the women's tag team titles was like 83 to 89, and then okay. They kind of went away with the women's tag team titles.
Yeah.
But I think there was only like maybe three or four teams that actually held the women's titles from 83 to 89.
That sounds about right, and I appreciate you keeping me straight on that one. Speaking of tag teams, this was a match, it seems like a cluster because you're now doubling the number of people who are involved as tag teams are competing in the elimination matches. And I love the concept here again as well. The British Bulldogs, Davey Boy Smith and Dynamite Kid, who are my favorite tag team of all time, by the way. The Killer Bees, the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers, the Young Stallions, and the team captain, Strikeforce, who had just recently won the World Wrestling Federation tag team titles. They're going into battle against the former champs and team captains, the Hart Foundation, along with the Islanders, the team of Demolition, the Dream Team, who were Dino Bravo and Greg Valentine by this point, and then the Bolsheviks of Nikolai Volkov and Boris Zhukov. And the good guys win that one as well. The Killer Bees and the Young Stallions, a big surprise, I thought, having those two teams as your sole surviving teams when you have guys like the British Bulldogs, who had been the champions, the current champions were in there in Strikeforce. So to me, that one was a bit of a surprise, probably the most surprising up until that point of Soul Survivors.
Yeah, that one was a little bit hard to follow because, you know, you had so many men on the apron and a lot of the camera angles, you couldn't even see what was going on during the match because it was 20 people on the apron.
Yeah, and
that was the longest match of the card. It went over 30 minutes, that match.
Yeah. Well, I know this, you know, 87, of course, this is the inaugural year. 88, they do it again, and they do the infamous double switch with Demolition and the Powers of Pain. But 88 would be the last year that we see the teams like that. And then they pared it down to where
we just had teams of four, and then most of these were captained by someone, and then they threw a tag team onto that. So they kind of split it up and spread the talent out a little bit more. What are your thoughts on teams of five versus teams of four with the Survivor Series concept? Because we're back to teams of five now.
It was just too many tag in, tag outs. Uh-huh. It went too quick. You didn't get to see a lot of people in the ring too much, because as soon as they would get in, they would do a move, and then they would tag right out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think the smaller, you know, do like two or three teams compared to like four or five.
Yeah.
It makes a better match than, you know, having two, five teams.
Right. What was your favorite team of this 10-team competition?
It was Hart Foundation. I've been a Hart Foundation ever since they started.
Okay.
Back in the day. And I was a big fan of Demolition, too. I liked the British Bulldogs a little bit, but I only liked the British Bulldogs when they brought Matilda out.
Yeah.
So that's the only time I really liked them very much.
Yeah, Matilda was a good addition to have out there. Now, before we get to the main event, I do want to talk a little bit about, and this is just me as a neurotic wrestling fan, especially back in that time where I, you know, I've talked about this before on podcasts. I can go back and remember these matches and who was in them and name all this. I couldn't tell you right now on the spot. I couldn't tell you one match from last year's Survivor Series, for example. It's just, I think part of it is because I was obviously way more invested in it, but also there has been so much that happens with, you know, 3-hour Raw, 2-hour SmackDown, now 2-hour NXT, the pay-per-views, the specials, all this kind of wraps up. And back then, you know, you had sporadic Saturday Night's Main Event and Superstars, as we talked about, and then primetime wrestling. So it was much easier, I think, to consume and digest wrestling. Do you feel that way? Is there too much going on out there right now with wrestling?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard to keep up with what's going on because, like you said, you had Raw, SmackDown, you got NXT, and then you're doing a pay-per-view a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then they were only doing like 3 or 4 a month, and there's so much. Like, I don't even watch Raw or SmackDown. I watch like the highlights on YouTube.
Yeah.
Because it's just too much to keep up. But then most of the time, I don't even watch the pay-per-views. I just kind of look on Facebook or Instagram and see who won,
mm-hmm.
and pretty much know from there. But going in, a lot of times it's so predictable now, like where you can tell pretty much what's going to happen before that even happens.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, at this time, because you have so many superstars on this card, and you also, you know, factor in that there was a women's match, to me there were some notable names missing from this inaugural Survivor Series, that being the Junkyard Dog. I was kind of disappointed that he wasn't on a team. I could have seen him fitting in somewhere on that Savage team, although that Savage team was really good. The Ultimate Warrior, who had just recently signed with WWE, and I think they were kind of waiting to parade him out in a bigger fashion. And kind of the same with the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. I believe, if I remember correctly, and I know you just watched this again last night, it's been a while since I've watched it, there was either a vignette or there was some kind of mention of DiBiase, I believe, on the original broadcast. Do you remember that?
Yeah, they were showing some of the vignettes that he had done back in the day. Like, uh-huh. I remember the one where he was sitting in the car counting his money, and then he went to the public pool and he kicked all the kids out of the pool. And they also showed the highlight of like when that little boy came up there with the basketball and he was going to bounce the basketball 15 times. I don't know if that had just happened or happened after it.
Okay.
But they were kind of hyping him a little bit, but I think it was like early the next year when he debuted,
yeah,
as the Million Dollar Man character.
Yeah, because he obviously becomes an integral part of the championship storyline almost right off the bat, because it's, you know, the Royal Rumble, the first Royal Rumble, which aired just on the USA Network. It was not a pay-per-view. That airs 2 months after this Survivor Series, and we get the rematch. What happens at that Royal Rumble is the signing for the rematch on the main event between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant. And, of course, DiBiase has bought Andre's contract at that point, and it's, you know, leading up to the double twins and the double cross on Hulk Hogan. So Ted DiBiase, for as
big a player as he was going to become in 1988, I was kind of surprised to not see him in some form or fashion a little more prominently, I guess, even if it would have been to be in the corner of Andre's team to kind of start establishing that relationship. But I get it, and it all worked out for the best. But, you know, as we get to that main event, Andre the Giant leads a team of behemoths of King Kong Bundy, the one-man gang, Ravishing Rick Rude, and the Natural Butch Reed. They take on, of course, Hulk Hogan, who is the champion, his teammates Bam Bam Bigelow, the Magnificent Morocco, Ken Patera, and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff. Now, here's where, again, that nitpickiness comes out of me as a fan. Of course, superstar Billy Graham was supposed to be on this team. He gets injured. He legitimately was injured and actually didn't wrestle again prior to this, or after this, I should say. And that's where Don Morocco, who had recently turned face, replaces him in that competition. But we bring in Paul Orndorff, who for most of 87 had been missing. The last time we had really prominently seen him, he wrestles Hulk Hogan on Saturday Night's Main Event in January of that year. That's where they both drop down from the cage at the same time. They restart the match. Orndorff was red hot at that point, and I really thought they were going to go somewhere else with him. I believe the legend has it that he was injured and took some time off. So that's where Andre the Giant kind of steps into the title picture, and we get WrestleMania 3. And then we don't see Orndorff for quite some time. He comes back on TV after Bobby Heenan is touting Ravishing Rick Rude and as being, you know, the best physique in wrestling. And, of course, Orndorff takes exception with that. Hires Oliver Humperdinck as his manager, who is also managing Bam Bam Bigelow, and becomes babyface again. And now he's on Hogan's team after this blood feud for, you know, most of 86 and into early 87. So that part of it, I wasn't a huge fan of because Hogan and Orndorff didn't acknowledge their past, but it all worked out. And, you know, again, just kind of being that nitpicky fan at this point. But Hogan's team loses. And again, we talked about that. It was a big shock to me as a young Hulkamaniac. Hogan gets counted out, and then Bam Bam Bigelow is left alone to battle One Man Gang, King Kong Bundy, and Andre. He takes care of the two cronies, but just cannot handle Andre the Giant.
Yeah, but the big guy you can run, but you can't hide. Isn't that what Smokin' Joe Frazier said?
Oh, yes, chased Andre, and Andre moved right out of the way. Now Bam Bam's trapped. Andre lowering shoulder after shoulder as we look right over the shoulder of the brain. Look at this, double underhook. Oh, got him over. What a suplex move.
That's it. The Giant wins the Survivor Series.
Here is the sole survivor, Andre the Giant.
They're not cheering Andre. They're cheering that man.
What's this?
The Hulkster in there. Oh, he nailed him. He nailed him with a championship belt. And Andre's down. Andre looking to get out of there.
This is a disgrace on the part of Hulk Hogan.
The Hulkster coming out of nowhere.
What a sore loser.
Take a look. You're looking at the greatest professional athlete in the world today.
I disagree. Andre survived it. Andre won it.
What are your thoughts on this main event match?
I was really excited to see Hogan and Andre, and when they finally got in the ring together, they went at it for a few minutes, and then out of the blue, King Kong Bundy pulls Hogan out and counts him out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, he's already out of the match. And then he comes back in the ring, and I mean, takes forever to get out of the ring and just kind of hypes it up, and to the point where the referee basically almost disqualified his team if he wouldn't leave the ring. I was so mad at that because I thought maybe that we would finally get to see the rematch that we seen in WrestleMania, and for some reason it didn't happen.
Yeah. And I think that the strategy there was to leave us wanting more for that main event on prime time in February. And I think that was a wonderfully told story because it all really started in January of that year when Andre turns against Hulk Hogan on Piper's Pit. We get the match at WrestleMania. They spread it out through the summer. You know, obviously there's no SummerSlam, there's no big events, but from WrestleMania to Survivor Series, you know that Andre is still that rival. He kind of gets a little bit of revenge by winning at Survivor Series, and then of course he wants a rematch now because why not get a rematch? And so he gets that, and just leading that into WrestleMania 4, that was the beauty of not having so much programming, that you didn't have to have these guys in there against each other every week, because had this happened today, we would have had, you know, the commissioner come out and organize a match where Andre and Hogan have to team together, even though they're at odds, and face off against the tag team champions of the Hart Foundation or whatever they may have ended up doing. So I appreciate the fact that even though as a kid we always said, God, I wish wrestling was on more, I'm glad that it was the way it was, because I think we were able to grow and grow these wonderful memories and have these moments kind of etched into our minds.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because, you know, like you said, nowadays it would be totally different. But back then, you only got to see a wrestling for maybe an hour or two a week, and they didn't have pay-per-views every single month. So whenever they finally did have a pay-per-view match, you'd have to wait 3 or 4 months for a pay-per-view match. And it led the storyline up so much better to where when you finally got to see it, it was worth the wait.
I totally agree with you on that. Now, I know that, like you said, you had taken a lot of notes and watching this. So what are your overall impressions 31, 32 years later now of this Survivor Series versus what we see with the last, 5 or 6 years worth of Survivor Series events?
I mean, the whole fact of the Survivor Series that got me was the teams, that you never thought that this person and this person would be on a team.
Mm-hmm.
And for seeing all the people team up, and it was kind of like an all-star team on some of those. And I like the concept a lot better than, nowadays, because a lot different now.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up too, because I feel like as much as I'm enjoying the fact that NXT has kind of been added to this mix, and as people are listening to this, Survivor Series we're a day removed from Survivor Series already, so we obviously don't know the results as we record this on Saturday, the day before Survivor Series, but I wish there were more stakes involved with the Survivor Series other than brand, you've got Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT now, but then what happens on Monday once the event is over? There may be a recap package, but there's no, at least there hasn't been anything announced where there's any kind of long, and that's the way it's been the last several years where they've done this Raw versus SmackDown, brand versus brand kind of mentality with it.
Yeah, I think they should put like, I think I listened to another podcast where they were talking about this, how I think it was After the Bell with Corey Graves on the Podcast Network, how when you got NXT versus SmackDown versus Raw, what's at stake?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Raw versus SmackDown versus NXT, maybe the winning team can get like a title match or a main event of WrestleMania or 30 spot at the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
Something to basically make the stakes a lot higher to where you have to win because you want that spot. And
right.
Now it's just more of bragging rights.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, and I actually have a video up on the My 123 Cents YouTube channel where I kind of dissect a two-part video on, Survivor Series, how I would kind of change things up, and then, like you said, making it a value, adding some value to it, and that 30th spot at the Royal Rumble, to me, makes the most sense, where you have the surviving team. And even if it's not the surviving team, if they're going to tally up all of the talents from the night, what show has won the most matches, then that show gets the 30th number in the Royal Rumble. And then they, leading up to the Rumble itself, they can do a tournament or do something to determine who's going to get those number 30 spots, the women and the men's. And I know in the past they've been doing things with the mixed match challenge to set that up. I don't know. It's just a few ideas from some wrestling fans. I'm going to sit back, though, and enjoy the ride. Scott, any final thoughts on Survivor Series 1987, wrestling with the 80s in general?
Not really. I think I'm good on that.
All right, man. Well, what are you enjoying now? Do you watch AEW? I know you obviously are an indie wrestling fan. I've seen you out at Stride shows. So what are you enjoying about pro wrestling these days?
I kind of got into NWA Power.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like the old school, kind of bringing it back. I mean, I do watch AEW. I watch some WWE. But, I mean, I like the old school part of NWA back then, because it kind of gives you the old school feel of it.
I totally agree with you there. You get that old school feel again. You can check out NWA Power on YouTube. Scott, I want to thank you for being a part of the show. I appreciate you spending some time here this week talking about wrestling with the 80s.
Well, I appreciate it, Kevin. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. And fans, stick around next week. Heath Hatton joins me once again for Two is Greater Than One. We are counting down to that big Stride Pro Wrestling presents AAPW Resurrection. It's happening on Saturday, December 7th. Be sure to join us for that as well. Have a great week and a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.